I'll catch you manana. Uncle Sam's only man, packing katanas. Remain anonymous while I'm leaving remains. That's a need to know, and you don't need to know my name.
Welcome to Upshift, No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. I'm Ryan Casella, one of the designers of the Essence 20 system, and an author on the G.I. Joe Transformers My Little Pony role-playing game, core rulebooks, as well as over a dozen other products for Essence 20 from Renegade. I'm trying something here, folks. I am stuck in traffic. It is a rainy day, so rainy that the trench-like highway that I usually take home to carry Expressway is closed. It is flooded. And so I'm in my car. I got a long drive, a slow drive through traffic. So instead of listening to a podcast, I'm recording a podcast. I don't have an outline because that would be so dangerous. So I just figured I would talk about a topic that is on my mind, that is at least loosely related to Essence 20, that I could do just talking to myself for an hour in a car. And so I want to talk about Duke. Duke is one of the leader characters from G.I. Joe and is often considered the main character of G.I. Joe. And for a long time, I thought was one of the biggest obstacles to G.I. Joe reaching its full potential. Because Duke is one of the most bland characters in a franchise that I think is super cool because of its characters, because it has so many elaborate characters that you get these snapshots into. It is this ensemble cast, this gigantic cast, and so often that cast in adaptations is reduced to a half dozen members, one of which is Duke, and that just like reduces the potential for interesting characters so much. But Duke is, like, he has very little backstory. He really is just a cookie-cutter character. He is templative. He is, not iconic, but, like, tropish. He's the good guy. He's the blonde leader type. He is a Captain America type before Captain America became very well-developed by a lot of writers that saw the potential in that character. And that works as the leader when you've got a big cast of more one giant note characters. So guys like Shipwreck, Deep Six, Beachhead, like Quick Kick, characters that you do a one sentence description and it's like, that is a really elaborate description about this one character. And they don't always work on their own, but they work in a large cast and you need somebody like Duke anchoring them down. But G.I. Joe kind of has this reputation for just being not to be taken seriously, and one of the reasons is that the poster boy of this franchise is this character that has no depth. Like, you can't really point to the Great Duke stories or even the Great Duke moments. He's got some zingers in the original animated series, but the original animated series, the Sunbow series, was like built on zingers. Every character has zingers, and Duke isn't even supposed to be one of the funny ones. It's just when a scene called for a funny button at the end, if Duke was the main character in that scene, Duke got the funny line. So a lot of the times I think that Duke is bad for G.I. Joe, and that if we could move away from Duke as the main character, that would be a good thing. And if you look at the last few different toy lines, it feels like the latest one, G.I. Joe Classified, which is the most successful G.I. Joe toy line in forever, that one is taking this lesson that less Duke is more. Because in Sigma 6, and let me just try and remember. So we had the New Sculpt era, which is the first relaunch of G.I. Joe. Actually, no. Let me go all the way back to the original toy line, where it was rare for a character to have more than two action figures. So Duke was one of the few characters that got multiple action figures, but he got like five, I think. Let me just think off the top of my head. You got the original one, then you got the Tiger Force repaint. You've got the one with like the red highlights, and then you've got the a very generic desert military looking guy. A fairly cool figure, but nothing about it really screams Duke. And then he got two Star Brigade figures. So I'm thinking six. Duke had six figures in the end, which is up there with Snake Eyes and Cobra Commander as far as characters that got the most different figures. So, yes, Duke got a lot of toys, and generally there was a Duke on the shelf because G.I. Joe went for 12 years. There were six figures. Two of them came out the same year. Actually, three of them might have come out the same year towards the end. Because towards the end of the line, they were kind of picking up that instead of adding new characters, they should focus more on their big-name iconic characters that they had in the catalog. So anyway, like, not counting those last couple of years where, yeah, you could at one point find, like, three Dukes on the shelf, you could generally find a Duke on the shelf, although there were some years that you couldn't, including the beginning, because Duke was not one of the original characters. The original leader of the team was Hawk, who was a blonde, crew-cut leader type, and so that's another reason that Duke is such a weird... just his place in G.I. Joe is so strange. He's coming in as if you were a fan of the original toy line or a fan of the original comics. He is the replacement. But he was really pushed hard for the animated series. He was presented as the leader. And then when the animated series eventually brought Hawk in, Hawk, who was basically the main character of the comic, especially before Snake Eyes really took off, when Snake Eyes was really just a member of the cast, and you would go several issues without anyone even mentioning Snake Eyes, because, you know, Snake Eyes grew to more importance, especially after Storm Shadow was introduced. So yeah, so Hawk was the main character of the comic, looked just like Duke in the comic, and there is this idea that the real G.I. Joe fans are the comic fans, and then the more casual G.I. Joe fans are the cartoon fans. I don't entirely agree with this, but I know that that is a perception, that the comic, or at least for a while that was a perception, that the comic is true G.I. Joe, the cartoon is a silly little adaptation. And the comic did come first, and the comic was hugely successful. And Duke does not really appear in the comic. He shows up early. No, not early. He shows up at issue 22, I believe, is his first issue. So it is the funeral for General Flag, who was the leader of G.I. Joe, and then he died, and then Hawk was supposed to take over as the ultimate leader, but then Duke comes in, and Duke was probably at his most interesting to me when it looked like there would be a rivalry between Duke and Hawk. Because, yeah, Duke shows up in a ridiculous scene. Like, people will talk about how the cartoon is ridiculous and the comic is more accurate military. The comic could be just as ridiculous. So a Cobra plane, I don't think it was a Rattler because the Rattler wasn't out yet. But anyway, a Cobra plane tries to bomb Flag's funeral. Actually, maybe it was the Rattler. Anyway, tries to bomb Flag's funeral, and Duke and Roadblock just show up. You know, conveniently just show up on the scene, fully armed, and Roadblock uses a heavy machine gun to shoot at the plane, while Duke stands next to him, firing a pistol that, even if he managed to hit that plane is not going down from the couple of pistol shots that Duke is taking while Roadblock is unleashing heavy machine gun fire. So yeah, that is the introduction of Duke, and then he says to the team that, like, he's going to whip the Joes into shape, which, if you'd been reading the comic up to that point, the Joes seemed like they were in shape. Yeah, they had just lost General Flag, but in general, like, they'd succeeded at every mission. They were written as this well-oiled machine. And so Duke coming in saying he's going to whip them into shape kind of cast Duke as the villain, because he didn't seem to understand G.I. Joe the way the readers did, and so there was immediately a disconnect between Duke and the readers. And the thing is that after the next five issues, Duke really disappears. He becomes a background player, because Flint is introduced shortly after, and actually that's another thing that it made it look like there would be a Hawk-Duke rivalry. When Flint is added to the team, Duke is there and he says, like, yeah, I'm bringing in some new people that I trust. And it was like, oh, there's going to be this divide, this Hawk's team versus Duke's team. And that could have been an interesting storyline, but really it only goes as far as that line when Duke brings in Flint. You don't know of all the other recruits who is, like, a handpicked Duke recruit who just came in through the usual method of G.I. Joe's being added to the team, who was a Hawk recruit, etc. But I do remember when I was binging through the comics as an adult, and at one point in the, like, 50s or 60s, like issue 50 or 60, Duke appears for like two or three panels in the comic, and I'm like, I don't remember the last time Duke was in this comic. And I grew up as a cartoon G.I. Joe guy and a toy line guy, And so I thought Duke was the one of the most important cogs in that machine. And for him to have gone so many issues without playing any kind of role, and for me not to notice, made me realize that, yeah, you know what? Duke filled a role on the cartoon that Hawk fills in the comic, and Duke really doesn't have much of a purpose, especially if they're not going to use him as a villain. But then towards the end of the comic, similar to how the toy line, because of course the comic was based on the toy line, and there was in the late 80s, early 90s, like a power struggle, I understand, between Larry Hama, who was writing the comic and really like has been established as somebody with incredible influence over G.I. Joe in general. So there was a power struggle between him and the people working on the G.I. Joe toy line, because every year the Hasbro was putting out 24 new characters, and he's like, I've got 12 issues a year, and I'm supposed to introduce another dozen characters. I'm supposed to introduce Sub-Zero, yet another Arctic Trooper. Like, why? Why am I supposed to put these new characters in when we've got all these characters? And I don't know if there was a change in who was in charge of the G.I. Joe line, but around 1992, so 92 to 94, for the last couple of years of the line, the toy line actually expanded to include all these like sub-teams. So that's where Ninja Force, the Drug Elimination Front, and then the opposite of that, the Headhunters, and then the Mega Marines and the Mega Monsters, and Star Brigade, both the G.I. Joe and the Cobra side. Like, if you went into the toy aisle, you would feel like G.I. Joe was four separate lines that looked alike. But every single one of these sub-teams was populated with familiar characters. And then there was Battle Corps, which was just the name of the regular G.I. Joe line. So, yeah, so at some point you had, like, oh, and the Eco Warriors. So the Eco Warriors had Flint as the main character, and then there were two new characters, Ozone and Clean Sweep added, and then the second wave added Barbecue and Deep Six. So you see how they're now taking familiar characters and they're recontextualizing them by putting on all these sub-teams. Likewise, Star Brigade was, on the G.I. Joe side, entirely established characters. Roadblock was the leader, even though he wasn't an astronaut or anything, but yeah, he was brought in as the leader. And then other astronauts, Payload and Countdown, and Ozone was repurposed from Eco Warriors to Star Brigade. So that's when it was new concepts using familiar characters. And Duke was really pushed then. Like I said, he got like three or four characters in those last 4 years of the line. Three or four figures, rather. And that's when Duke started showing up in the comic. But not... Again, there's very rarely can you point to Duke and say, like, he had this amazing storyline in the comic. And even in the cartoon, where Duke was a prominent character, like, he got kidnapped or captured and then freed himself in multiple of those original, the miniseries. So there were two miniseries, and then the first season, and then the second season, and then the movie, and that was the entire animated series. Duke plays a very small role in the second season, and plays a big role in the first half of the movie before he famously would have been killed off or knocked into a coma. Even looking at those, Duke doesn't have a whole lot of memorable moments. So my argument has always been that G.I. Joe doesn't need Duke. And so when the toy lines continued and we had the G.I. Joe vs. Cobra era, which is G.I. Joe vs. Cobra, Spy Troops, Valor vs. Venom, they were all this new soft plastic style of bodies that were created, and still the same size more or less, although they were a little more bulked up. Not as bulked up as G.I. Joe Extreme, but still, you could tell immediately whether something was from the vintage line or from this era because of just how muscular the characters were presented as. And Duke was presented as the main character then, and you would have a Duke every couple of waves. Very few of them had interesting dynamic looks. Really, Duke, if he doesn't perfectly replicate or at least like heavily homage his original figure, then Duke can really, you can slap any name on that toy and it could be anybody. In fact, there was this, somebody has recently unearthed and shared and translated a Japanese G.I. Joe tie-in from the 80s, and Duke was renamed Grunt in that. Grunt is already an existing character. And I don't think that Grunt, like our Grunt, I don't think he exists in the Japanese media. But it is just funny that Yeah, you know what? Duke could have been Grunt. Like, and Grunt is considered the most generic G.I. Joe character there is. So looking at a lot of these G.I. Joes, a lot of these Duke figures from the G.I. Joe versus Cobra era, Duke doesn't stand out, but we kept getting more and more Dukes. And then things got worse with Sigma 6, because Sigma 6 was one of those small team concepts where we got maybe a dozen or so Joes over the length of the line, and we would just constantly be getting the same characters over and over again. Like, I love Sigma 6 toys, but I was really frustrated with the character selection because we got so many Dukes, we got so many Snake Eyes, and the thing they did with Duke is that they gave him a lot of the really fancy equipment, and any one of those characters could have been a cool original character, and their whole gimmick could have been this piece of equipment that they've given to Duke. So instead of doing that, they decided Duke was going to be the guy that just gets all the cool toys. And he's defined as, once again, this guy who can be anything. Which means that if you're collecting multiple toys of the same character, you either have to pretend he keeps swapping his clothes and swapping his equipment, or to use all your toys together, as I loved to do when I was a kid, and, you know, as I do now by displaying them, you have to kind of pretend that some of the Dukes are other characters. Or, you know, split them up across multiple shelves, like I've done. I don't want to have the same character twice on the same shelf, and so I've got Duke spread out. This was then followed up by the 25th anniversary line, where Duke had an interesting place in it, because the 25th anniversary line, which then continued into, like, the movie adaptation and whatnot, and G.I. Joe Retaliation, no, not Retaliation, that was Pursuit of Cobra. Pursuit of Cobra is a toy line name. I don't know how badly you can hear the rain over me talking. Maybe it's being filtered out. Who knows? I'll find out when I try and edit this and post it. So, continuing with the history of Duke. You know what? Actually, I'm just going to go back since I've lost my train of thought. One great example of how little depth there is to the Duke character is that in the animated series, in the movie, when they introduced the idea that Falcon is Duke's half-brother, like, that feels like it could be a huge thing that would have to be retconned to fit in. But nope, nobody bats an eye. People question the logic of Cobra Law being the basis for Cobra, because we knew enough about Cobra that we had to question this new backstory that's been strapped onto it. But the idea that Duke has this brother we've never heard about until now makes total sense, because we never heard about Duke's parents either, or anything about his childhood, or anything about his life outside of G.I. Joe. He was a total blank slate after appearing in 50 or 60 episodes of this animated series on a regular basis. So, going back to the future toy lines, the 25th anniversary struggled to give Duke an identity, because it was supposed to be homages to the original line, and when you've got characters like Snake Eyes had five different looks in the original line, and also had, like, he appeared in different looks in the animated series. So those 25th figures, they could have, here's Snake Eyes as a commando in all black, here's Snake Eyes as a commando in blue shades like he was on the first season of the animated series, here's Snake Eyes with a visor, here's Snake Eyes with a visor purplish from the animated series, here's an updated visor, here's his version 3 look, his version 4 look. They could do that, and you can make multiple different interesting Snake Eyes. But when it came to Duke, they were just like, here's Duke. Here's Duke in a different shade of tan. Here's Duke with a different head sculpt, but more or less the same look. And it just did not. It just showed how the lack of dynamism to the Duke design and concept, that they couldn't draw on any source of media and say, like, here's another Duke. Here's a classic Duke that everyone's been waiting on. But again, Hasbro did just keep releasing more and more Dukes. And they made him the main character of the first movie and then killed him off in the first act of the second movie. Rather unceremoniously. I feel like I know that there is a lot of stuff that got cut from that was filmed and cut from the original script for G.I. Joe Retaliation. And I believe a more concrete death of Duke was filmed and was supposed to be, like, a roadblock reacting to it. Because when you watch the movie, like, the whole place gets bombed, and the surviving Joes, so Roadblock, Lady J, and Flint were the ones that are on site that survived, and then they later meet up with Snake Eyes. But yeah, the surviving Joes are reacting to the whole team being decimated and to them suddenly being fugitives. But nobody really specifically says, man, Duke's dead. I think you see Roadblock holding Duke's dog tags. But, like, they established early on that Duke and Roadblock are friends off the battlefield. Like, when they are on leave, they go on leave together and they hang out as friends. So there was supposed to be this connection between the characters. And I'm sure there should have been some kind of a scene where Roadblock's like, man, they killed everybody, and they killed my boy Duke, like my best friend, this guy that my daughters call Uncle Duke. Of course, those daughters also disappear and are never mentioned again, even as he's like a fugitive, so maybe just the storyline lacked these obvious emotional touch points that they could have written into it. I don't know. I don't know if it was poorly written to begin with, or it had a lot of studio interference, but Retaliation is a movie that, boy, that could have been a better movie. Just using the elements that they worked with. But yeah, so Duke gets killed off in the first act of that movie, and you don't go the rest of the movie thinking like, wow, this feels weird not having Duke. It's not like in X-Men The Last Stand, which has a ton of problems, one of which is that they kill off Cyclops and Professor X by about the halfway point. Both of these characters are dead, and the dynamic of the team feels off. Like, it just doesn't feel familiar as the X-Men anymore.
Take the next ride onto Avenue Powell.
So not having Duke on the team didn't feel wrong. And in fact, I don't think if Duke just didn't appear in the second movie, I don't think anyone would have minded. Like, at this point, we've had three G.I. Joe live-action movies. And Duke is only in one movie and the first act of the second movie. And it just shows that, like, yeah, he's optional. So why have I been thinking about Duke so much? Well, the Skybound got the G.I. Joe license. And they've been doing two concurrent universes. One of which is a continuation of the Larry Hama universe, which, unfortunately, I got the first issue that Skybound published, and then my comic shop couldn't pull the second one for me, and so I had a stack of, like, issue 301 and then 303 on, just on my desk, waiting for them to finally get a printing of 302 to get to me. And, like, I'm not being picky. I'm not saying I need any specific cover. I don't need it to be a first printing. I just want to read the whole story. And so so I don't know. I know Duke is in the first issue and actually has a pretty significant role, because one of the storylines, there's, like, three different storylines in that first issue, and one of them is just Duke and Wild Bill trying to gain control of this out-of-control transport jumbo jet. I forget the name of it. The name's not coming to me. So, Duke is pretty cool in that issue, but there was a lot of different characters that they could have put in the Duke seat. So it wasn't like it had to be Duke, but the fact is, Duke is in this, and he is being used well. But then, in the Energon universe, when I heard that instead of a G.I. Joe comic, they were launching with a Duke and a Cobra Commander comic, I was concerned. I was like, oh no, they think that Duke is important, and Duke shouldn't be important, was my thinking at the time. Because you either make Duke not interesting and don't explore him at all so that it's consistent with how he's come before, but that's not super interesting and that's can't really carry its own book, or you do something interesting with Duke and that betrays the generic nothingness of this character, because then it should have been somebody else. If you're going to make Duke somebody other than Duke, then why are you writing a Duke story? And this comic really brought me back around to Duke, because I grew up as a Duke fan. Like, I was a Flint guy. Like, Flint was my main guy, and between Duke and Flint, I was always hoping for Flint to be the leader of the episode. But I was totally fine with Duke. I thought of him as an important character until I revisited G.I. Joe as an adult and realized that, no, Duke serves a purpose. He's a means to an end. He's not as fleshed out or as interesting as a lot of the other characters. But the fact is that Duke left an impression on people. So despite not having as many lines or appearances in the animated series as Flint or Lady J or Cobra Commander, despite all the things that I've been saying about Duke not being that interesting, not having that many appearances in the cartoon or in the comic book, people remember Duke. And I think it really is on the strength of Michael Bell's performance, and especially in those first two miniseries where Duke is presented as, like, the be-all and all leader of G.I. Joe, everyone answers to Duke. And I will compliment Michael Bell has a really, like, an enchanting performance as Duke. He makes an excellent leader. And now that I'm really deep into Voltron, because for those who don't know, I manage the Voltron social media accounts. So I've been watching a lot of Ultron as part of my day job, which is as awesome as it sounds. Yeah, now that I'm hearing Michael Bell as Lance, who is the more rebellious one in that series, I'm realizing that Michael Bell has a little more range than I even gave him credit for. Because I would say things like Michael Bell's other G.I. Joe characters are all Duke with some kind of an accent. He's got the evil accent. The evil Duke is Scrap Iron. The evil Australian Duke is Major Blood. Southern Duke, or extra Southern, as Perrin told me, because he thought that Duke already sounded pretty Southern. So extra Southern Duke is Lift Ticket. But no, now that I'm hearing a very different character, very different performance from Michael Bell, I'm really seeing that he did something special with Duke, and that was pretty cool. Whether that's why Duke resonates, or whether people really just look at a character like Duke and think like, yeah, that guy should be in charge. Duke is someone that people think of as the leader. And so to have this comic book that explores Duke as an interesting character, as a character that has, now has a backstory, has depth, has motivation, things that you figure the original Duke should have had, but really got glossed over. I am glad that the Duke that is being presented in the Energon comics matches the Duke that people thought he should be overall. And I am bringing this up because it was just announced today, as of this recording, this rainy day recording, that the Duke trade paperback was the top-selling trade paperback of June. So ICV2 does these lists. The veracity of the list has been questioned. I've said this before. Basically, anytime I quote ICV2, doesn't feel like they have
200 meters. Turn left onto Kevin St. Clair.
It doesn't feel like they have the tightest, the most scientific approach to how they get their data. But the fact is, they are one of the only people that does do anything to give us an idea. So even though maybe it wasn't the number one, maybe it wasn't strictly the number one best-selling trade paperback, but it was selling well enough that ICV2 could list it as the top-selling trade paperback of June.
In 500 meters at the roundabout, take the second exit onto Avenue Glengarry.
And that's just mind-blowing to me as a G.I. Joe fan, because, as I've said several times, I'm used to G.I. Joe kind of getting the back seat in popular culture. That despite some major accolades of being a very long-running, well-selling, well-established toy line, comic book, and animated series, that for whatever reason, G.I. Joe's legacy for the longest time.
We found a faster route via Route Trans-Canadienne West, Auto Route 40 West, which saves 5 minutes. If you prefer to stay on the current route, tap no thanks.
As I was saying, so this trade paperback selling well is mind-blowing to me as a G.I. Joe fan, because we are so used to G.I. Joe being an also-ran...
Exit the roundabout onto Avenue Glengarry.
Being an also-ran in popular culture, that it's not...
Continue on Avenue Glengarry for 800 meters.
Like, when new G.I. Joe content is announced, like there was that Amazon Prime Lady J series that was being developed, and of course, the Snake Eyes movie and the Operation Blackout video game. Like, shortly after the announcement, a lot of people are just like, why? Why are they still dragging this franchise out? And they're like, oh, that's not a nice reception. I really want people to be as excited about G.I. Joe as I am, and to still see it as a toy line with a lot of potential. Not just a toy line, but like a brand with a lot of potential. Which obviously is what I bring to the role-playing game every time I write it. And actually, I will admit, one of my personal rules is that when writing an example or writing an art order, there is always somebody more interesting than Duke. And so anytime that you see Duke in an example, except possibly in Factions in Action 1, I think I may have written a Duke example there just because contextually he fit the best. But otherwise, I always feel like if you can choose anyone other than Duke, you have made a better choice, just because, again, there's much more interesting characters than Duke. But yeah, I am finally after a rocky road, a long, long winding relationship with Duke, have come back around thanks to Skybound and the Energon universe. Their version of Duke is a character that I am glad people are getting behind, and that if this rebounds the image of the G.I. Joe popular, like, if this rebounds G.I. Joe's image in popular culture, I'm super excited for that. Hi, it's me again. So I am still stuck in traffic. My GPS estimated that it would be a 45-minute drive. I have been in the car for 45 minutes, and now it's telling me it's a 30-minute drive. So I think this storm is just totally thrown off its ability to calculate how long it'll take me to get home. So you've got me again, and I figured I would record another segment to fit into this same episode. That's because there's some news. There is, actually, I guess I can cover a lot of news, because again, I got some time. The first thing I should say is that, last episode and the last couple of episodes, I've said Upshift is going to be inconsistent, and I don't know when the format's going to change, what's the post-Jason Keighley version of Upshift, like how long it's going to take before it finds its new format. I'm doing it solo right now, and I'm still okay with that, but I do ultimately see getting some kind of co-host in the future. The, nobody's moving at all, and I'm worried. Anyway, the reason that, it's still been more infrequent than I even personally expected was that I had a big deadline for a project that hasn't been announced yet, and then it was immediately before my trip to Disney for a week, and so I couldn't even ask for an extension, or if I asked for an extension, which I, as much as possible, I have tried to avoid doing. So if I needed an extension, I couldn't just get a 1 or 2 day extension or a 1 week extension. It would have to be a minimum of a 2 week extension, and that's assuming that I could go to Disney and then come back and be ready to write within a couple of days, which just based on how that trip went, like, it was a great trip, but it was an exhausting trip, and I came back on a Wednesday, because, you know, when you travel Wednesday to Wednesday, it's much cheaper than traveling, like, Friday to Friday or Saturday to Saturday, just FYI. But yeah, I came back on a Wednesday, went back to work on Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday crashed. Like, Saturday, my body was finally like, you know what, we're done here. And so, had I gotten some kind of extension, and I had been writing then, I would have probably banked on getting a lot done on Saturday, and nothing would have been done. And then, you know, the Sunday, the post-vacation groceries and stuff that would have needed to be done, it would have been a struggle. Like, being a writer, as writing as often as I do as a second job, like, I have a full-time 8-to-4 job 5 days a week, and then I come home and then I write around my family schedule while also trying to be an active part of my family. And my wife also has a job that she works a lot of overtime at, so just between the two of us, we are both working a lot while also trying to be there for our kids. I'm saying trying to be there, like, we are there for our kids. It's just we pack a lot into our schedules. And so had I had to write after coming home from Disney, that would have been quite a weekend. And we're usually pretty good about balancing these things, but that would have been a stress point on both of us individually. So anyway, one thing I knew I could cut, because it's mainly a commitment to myself and it doesn't have the same repercussions as missing out on a writing deadline, is that I can cut back on Upshift and on the Essential Builds blog. So I've started jotting down notes for the next Essential Builds, which I thought was going to be this Friday's release, and then the following Friday I would try and get an Upshift out. But again, given this traffic, it's looking like I'm going to have to do the opposite. Well, this traffic has given me the opportunity to record an Upshift on the go for people who used to listen to our Geek Together podcast. The on-the-go format was just whenever I would record with Kathy, and then I would drive her home, we would record these bonus episodes, these Geek Together on-the-go episodes. So yeah, so this is Upshift on the Go. The news I wanted to talk about is that the Ennie Awards were recently announced, and that when I originally posted this to social media, if you've seen it, I said that I got two nominations. One was for the Field Guide to Action Adventure, and one of them was for the My Little Pony Role-Playing Game Core Rulebook. I've been corrected that the Field Guide to Action Adventure wasn't nominated. It won. So it won like a judge's spotlight of reward. So what happens is that the judges, they go through everything that they are considering, you know, of all the valid candidates for the year, and then they decide what fits into which category. I think all categories get 5 nominees, and then after all the nominees have been picked, the judges look over any of the products that just did not get nominated anywhere, and the judges get to champion products then, like, it is unfair that this product did not get a nomination for anything. So it's just going, it's skipping the queue, and it's going straight to being a winner. So in some ways, it is an honorable mention because, you know, I'm not competing in any categories. Our Field Guide to Action Adventure isn't competing in any categories. But in another way, it is winning, it's won over a judge. And so it's a more prestigious version of an honorable mention. It's a don't sleep on this product. And so it would be cool if the Field Guide to Action Adventure kind of got a bump in interest now that it's won a judge's spotlight. For a lot of reasons. One, I love that book. And I've talked about how there are some products I put in Sleepless Nights on. The Field Guide to Action Adventure is the one that I had the most sleepless nights working on. I probably did more than I was expected for that book, and I probably did more. Like, when you measure all the hours that I was paid to work on that book, I probably made less per hour working on it than any other book. And yet, I'm prouder of that than most of the books I've worked on. And I'm proud. I'm very happy with every book that I've worked on for the Essence 20 system. And so for someone else, someone who really knows their role-playing games, one of the judges, to say, this is something special, this is something that people should pay attention to, that feels great. But then the other reason that I'm excited with the idea that maybe people will give the Field Guide to Action Adventure a second look and they might build a new audience is that it's the connective tissue. Like, if you get into the Field Guide to Action Adventure, then you're not just into the Power Rangers, G.I. Joe, Transformers, My Little Pony role-playing game. You are into Essence 20. Like, it is the only system, not setting neutral, but like setting, combined setting. It is the only combined setting source book we've put out, other than the crossover adventures that we've done. And so it gets you in the head of an Essence 20 player and the potential of Essence 20 as a system. Because it shows how you can, like, it shows how to play Essence 20, and it shows how to GM Essence 20, and it shows how to take all of the different settings to create your own setting. Which could be something like what the Skybound did with the Energon universe, in that it took these two different universes and it combined them. One thing I didn't talk about in the Duke portion of this episode is that something that I thought really was smart about the Energon universe. Oh, but this is like a spoiler for the Energon universe, and that's not really what this episode's about. All right. I will vague it up and say that the Energon universe takes an aspect of G.I. Joe, not even a particularly popular one, and finds a way that it clashes with an aspect of the Transformers universe to create a new conflict that you never see in G.I. Joe or Transformers. Or you did see it a little bit in G.I. Joe, but it's extra pronounced when combined with Transformers. And that's one of the great things about a crossover. It's not just putting these two things together. It's creating a greater whole by combining the different elements. And so, yeah, so the, like, if you are only playing one Essence 20 game and you pick up the Field Guide, it is useful to you. The jamming stuff, the behind the scenes,
turn left onto Ruhaj.
Even the character creation analysis, I think that chapter is underrated but important, because you've got something like Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder. You have thousands of bloggers that are doing that kind of content, and just, you know, you have the community resources to enhance your experience and to enhance your game. Essence 20 doesn't have that large community, like not on the scale of Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder. So having this section in there that gives you the kind of insight that community knowledge can provide, I think shows people how to think about Essence 20 on a different level. And not in a way that can hurt the game, but in a way that you can get the character that you want out of the character you're building, whether you're doing the crossover rules or not. Selfishly, on multiple levels, it would be cool if the Field Guide to Action Adventure got more attention, and it would be cool if Essence 20 got more fans out of it. But one way or another, it is cool that the un-Essence 20 product can now say that it is an Ennie award-winning product, and that of all the Ennie award-winning products, it's the one that links all of the Essence 20 settings together. Well, actually, sorry, it doesn't link My Little Pony in there. We weren't able to get that one in when we were writing the book. So, it is just cool that there is... but it is cool that an Essence 20 product got an Ennie award, and that of all the products, it is one that I really care about, that really means a lot to me. And then the other product, the one that got nominated, is the My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook. The My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook got nominated for best family game, and I don't have the other nominees on there, and I don't play role-playing games with my family. Like, I have, but it's basically, it's been Pathfinder and it's been Essence 20, so I don't even know. I couldn't judge the quality of the other games compared to the My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook. So I don't really know if it's got a great chance of winning. It would be nice. That is another book that I put a lot of time and effort into. It wasn't a sleepless nights kind of one, because that comes with a specific combination of a lot of work needing to be done and a tighter deadline. Whereas My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook had a broader timeline. I started it long before it was published, and that's when I wrote the intro, the origins, the roles, the influences, the general perks, and the magic system. Oh no, and the jamming system. Talking about stuff like the challenges and stress, that was also in my first pass, and then later when Elisa and Trivia, who were the co-authors on the book, they were both full-time Renegade employees, and then they left Renegade, and so the My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook wasn't done, and so they brought me back to do a little bit more writing, mostly threats. I think is the only thing I did the second pass threats, or is that when I wrote? Anyway, I would say I wrote about a third of that book outside of the adventure. I had nothing to do with the adventure in the core rulebook. I did write the In a Jam adventure, or at least I picked up where another author had left off, but I didn't write the adventure in the core rulebook. Oh, and the contacts. I think threats, contacts, all of that stuff was not in the original draft. Or like, of the two, I worked on this book three times. The first time I did the majority of the options and the GMing stuff. Second time is when I added a bunch of threats and contacts, because contacts didn't exist as a system yet. And so that was similar to Cobra Codex, getting a second pass at that, although I didn't get a second pass at that. I messed up and had to take a second pass at that, whereas My Little Pony, because of circumstances I had nothing to do with, I was brought in to do more work on it, and I got to bring contacts into My Little Pony. And My Little Pony really benefits from contacts more than most, because most of the villains end up as allies anyway later on in My Little Pony, so it's much more relevant to that brand and that style of storytelling. So I did the threats and contacts in the second go around, and then the third go around was after the project had been handed off, and then there were some concerns about how consistent it should be with Essence 20, with the other Essence 20 systems, whereas where should it be lighter, where should it be heavier. And so it was made lighter, and then some of the Essence 20 veterans came in and said, like, well, if we're calling this part of Essence 20, even if it's a lighter version of Essence 20, we don't want there to be things that will mess up the balance of the other Essence 20 games. And so we kind of gave it like a group edit. Like, we gave like a feedback pass to make sure that it was still consistent with the sensibilities of Essence 20. I feel like it's got a good chance, because there is a lot of good stuff in that book. I am proud of the Magic system, and I think it's really cool, and has, like, people that follow my Essential Builds blog know that I will dip into Magic, and I will use it as freely as I use any other mechanic from any other more advanced Essence 20 settings. And likewise, I have used influences and even occasionally rolls from My Little Pony for other Essence 20 crossover builds. So yeah, I do think that is actually, that is one of the bigger sleeper books in my I'm in a game right now that is technically a G.I. Joe game. Actually, it's technically an Energon Universe game. It's mainly, we are playing G.I. Joes in the Energon Universe, but the GM has expanded to include a lot of other popular culture. And recently, all of our characters got captured, and the GM said, well, we can do one of two things. We can do some kind of jailbreak mission, or we can do a mission where you send in a second group of PCs to rescue the first group of PCs, and then we'll see which PCs we use going forward. And both times that we've made characters, he's told us you can use absolutely anything from all over, and in fact, he's even introduced a magic, like a spellcaster NPC that we've interacted with a couple of times. And so for the first batch of characters, I think we all stuck just to G.I. Joe sources. That's where I made my jetpack engineer scaffold. If people, again, if you've seen the Essential Builds blog, I put my build up there. But for the second group of characters, the GM once again said, choose whatever you want and I will make it work. And we're like, maybe they're gonna send in like a real weird group of people. And so I am looking as a spellcaster. My friend Charles, who plays our officer in that group, is looking at playing a dragon, using the baby dragon web supplement from My Little Pony. And so yeah, the potential to bring the magic stuff into the G.I. Joe world, you know, can lead to some really cool character concepts, but it also opens up the conversation with the people in that gaming group. And Charles bought the G.I. Joe role-playing game because he's a fan of G.I. Joe, and he's a fan of role-playing games, and he's a friend of mine. So he had a lot of buy-in to that specific rulebook, but he hasn't bought all the other Essence 20 stuff. And so when we decided, we still had like half an hour before the end of the session, so how about now that we've all been captured, we talk about these characters we're going to build for our second group, and the potential of Essence 20 as a crossover product, really, like, it was revealed to Charles really for the first time. And then and also the conversation was like, and there's the My Little Pony rulebook, and it is a good rulebook. And Charles was flabbergasted by that. I don't think he realized I worked on that. I don't think he realized that it had so many fans, but I have received a lot of compliments on different ideas that were introduced in the My Little Pony rulebook that I personally championed and put in there, and I'm glad of it. So, yeah, I may not have had the same level of involvement with the My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebook as I did with the Field Guide. Because, like, I think I may have even written more of My Little Pony than I wrote of the Field Guide, but what I was just an author, whereas on Field Guide, I was also a developer and a project lead. Like, we didn't really have strict titles for what everything did, so I got the developer credit, and I do consider myself having developed that. But anyway, that was a product that I worked on that much more than just being an author, and so it means that much more to me that it wins an Emmy. But hey, if My Little Pony also wins, I will also be proud of that.
Well, hello, this is me in my recording studio, which, you know, is my office, out of the rain, even totally out of the rain. It's a few days later. It has stopped raining. It is much better. I listened to the episode in the edit. You could totally hear the harder it's raining. And I also underestimated just how loud you can hear my turn signals, which if you've listened this far into the episode, you all heard as well. I debated whether it was worth re-recording the whole thing, but I kind of was charmed by the experience of being in a car with me as it's pouring rain and I'm talking to myself. So it is the least consequential episode of Essence 20 that I'm, or of Upshift that I'm putting out. So why not? Let's leave this up there. And it's I'm in my experimental phase as a podcaster, I guess. So not to drag this long episode out any longer, let me just say that thank you for joining us for another episode of Upshift, the Essence 20 Network's, thank you for joining us for another episode of Upshift, the No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. Before I go, I just want to bring attention to NoDirectionPodcast.com, a website full of other great gaming podcasts, great gaming blogs. Whether your interests are Essence 20, broader role-playing games, or the gaming hobby in general, we have great content for you, put together by passionate hobbyists and professionals in the field. Go ahead there, check it out. If it's probably been a while since you've gone to a website other than a social media platform, and doesn't it feel good to go to a website, click the .com and just read the content on that website or peruse its deep, deep catalog of content. You know it does. So if you're going to go to any .com, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com. Also want to thank our patrons. You keep the lights on. You keep... you had nothing to do with the car staying on the road. I don't use any of the funds for personal reasons. All the money that's raised by the Patreon goes right back into the network. Mostly, by the way, of equipment and server fees and, you know, paying for things like Zoom. Although, come to think of it, now that Jason and I aren't podcasting together, I don't know the last time we even used Zoom, so maybe it's time that I cancel that and save the network a little bit of money that we can put elsewhere. But yes, thank you. If you want to continue to support the content that we are putting out, you can go to patreon.com/nodirection, put in any amount that you feel comfortable with. Any donation is appreciated. And finally, thank you to Word Burglar for the use of Letters from Snake Eyes Part 4. You can find out more at wordburglar.com. Until then, I'm Ryan Costello, and I will see you in 2 weeks for the next episode of Upshift. The team of green shirt, highly trained specialists, kept it to myself, told the others don't question it, trust me. Some things are better left unsaid, except my demons that were screaming like the undead. I let them in every day, my main meditation was taking them down, my pain medication. Shanna saw it, and she knew she couldn't call me, at least until I found out what happened to Tommy. That mission was private. For now, the objective was stopping the threat of this venomous collective spreading across the globe. I was ready to lock and load with flash, grand slam, clutch, zap, and rock and roll. Hawk, steal a grunt, breaker, and short fuse. And before I knew, I gained a whole lot more to lose. Accept the fear, don't let it scare you. When you move with the wind, no one can hear you. Fate's your friend one day, the next it takes lives. Assume the worst, but count on snake eyes.